right, so this is the very first edition. It's fresh, it's new, it's Cinema Squabble, and you can find us at cinemasquabble.com. And how do I know this? Because, well, joining me here at the table today, we've got Brian Zitzelman, Brian the Movie Guy, and Sarah Michelle Fetters. Welcome, everybody.
Hello.
Thank you.
How you doing?
Hi.
How you doing?
Yeah, so this is a, how to sum up, this is a culmination of something that the four of us and a few other critics here in the Seattle area have been doing for years, which is we gather in a theater around downtown Seattle, I don't know how many times a week, some 3 to 4 times a week.
Yeah, make us get to the free movies that we see before the movie starts.
Well, maybe we can tip people off as to how that works a little bit later.
You should probably introduce yourself, though,
yeah.
Adam.
And yes,
Adam.
Thank you. I'm Adam Gerke. But where I'm driving this is the four of us, we are all film critics. And there are many more who are similar to us. But what we do before each of the press screenings is usually we're in the theaters, we're the obnoxious ones in the front row who are all kind of picking apart the various different films that we've seen for that week or who we think is going to win the Oscar or win the SAG Award or do whatever. And we've been saying for years, we've got to put together a podcast. And for the first time ever, we are actually committing to do this. And so here we are gathered in a room, four microphones, ready to roll it out. That being said, I started doing this originally for KPLU a number of years ago, and now I write for 24/7 News. Brian Z, why don't you tell us a little bit about where you come from?
I write for the Seattle Movie Examiner and also Zitzel Film, which is a little blog. You can find some of my other writings that are perhaps about older movies, that kind of stuff.
Brian T.
It could be, if you're in France, it would be Brian Z Movie Guy, so don't get
Brian
us confused with Brian Z. Yeah, so I'm on Star 101.5, Como News Radio. I'm also in Denver, Colorado. I'm in Portland, Oregon. I'm all over the place on the radio. And then about 5 years in, I realized I should start writing this stuff down. So I do have a website.
I can use my
5 years too late. And that's at brianthemovieguy.blogspot.com. So you can find my stuff there.
brianthemovieguy.blogspot.com.
Yes, because okay. I lost brianthemovieguy.com to a Japanese dating website for housewives. True story.
Oh my gosh.
I was trying to undercut you.
We're going to have to get the details on this in a little bit. But and Sarah, how about yourself?
I am the film critic for the Seattle Gay News, and I'm also the editor for moviefreak.com. I have been doing this for 14 years now.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah. I was going to say, I think you were the first person I remember meeting when I first strolled into the theaters, and you were holding court over in a corner with like three or four other people.
It sounded accurate.
And I was like, "What? Who are these people over here? They're having a fun conversation. I want to get in on it."
That's so funny. Sarah, you're the first one I met too. And I started about 12 years ago, but Sarah was the first one I met.
Mm-hmm.
So. I started in 2009, and Sarah was the first one I talked to. We were getting ready to watch Ice Age, and as you do, you started talking about Public Enemies from Michael Mann.
So Sarah, you're actually the one that drew us all together inadvertently or advertently, hard to say at this point. But here we are. So Cinema Squabble, take one. We are here today talking about 2014 specifically because we are now January. It's a new year, 2015. We've got Oscars on the forefront, all sorts of things staring us down the barrel. But we want to talk a little bit about what we thought was interesting or amazing, our top 10 lists from 2014 and so on. And I thought of all sorts of ways we could really whittle down our lists. But Sarah, you were saying to me that, you know, we should just tell people what our lists are and they'll get a feel for who we are right off the bat. And I thought, you know what? That makes sense. So let's do that. And I'll just kick it off here. I'll just give you my top 10 for 2014. And I know we're going to have a lot of overlap on a number of these things. But I think there's also, it's where we find the not overlap that I think is the interesting stuff.
Let the snobbery begin.
Right, right. Yeah. And so number one for me, Birdman. Number two, Boyhood. Number three, Grand Budapest Hotel. But I really kind of consider those top three, like all, well, no, like number one. They could all be number one in my book and they all win. I also put Nightcrawler in there as number four. St. Vincent, number five.
Whoa.
Yeah, I thought it was that funny. And Foxcatcher, number six.
Snob.
Listen to you.
Gone Girl at number seven. I even threw in Edge of Tomorrow at number eight. And then I put in, just because just because I felt like if I exclude these, people are going to think I'm crazy. Imitation Game at 9 and Theory of Everything at 10. With like special honors to things like Interstellar and
no special honors.
No.
American Sniper,
no,
all that sort of stuff. There you go. So okay, so those are my top 10 right there. Brian?
See, I take the coward's way out. I only pick a number one, and then the rest I do alphabetical order because I can't even figure out what order to put them on otherwise. So my number one for the year, that's the only one that's in any particular order, is Under the Skin by Jonathan Glazer. After that, I've got A Most Violent Year. I've got Child's Pose. I've got Ernest and Celestine. I've got Gone Girl. I've got Grand Budapest Hotel. Ida, Inherent Vice, 2 Days, 1 Night, and the German film We Are the Best.
It's nice that you've got two 2013 movies in your 2014 top 10.
Well, they got released in actual theaters in 2014. You know, this is the Seattle Cinema Squabble, Seattle-based.
Let the squabble begin.
I have always found the idea that if you have a movie that's not actually kept in theaters during the qualifying run, that it's not really a movie for that year. You know.
Okay. All right. Brian, the movie guy.
Okay, so my top 10, and for whatever reason, I find it fascinating to look at other people's top 10s and compare them to mine. I actually did a piece like, a very brief piece, but I took like 10 critics in Seattle to find out what were the real movies that people recommended. Mm-hmm. So, Adam, when you were listing yours, you and I have to share 5.
Mm.
Brian, we share 2.
Yeah.
And Sarah, we'll get to yours in a little bit after you do yours. But my number one was Birdman. I do number all of mine. Birdman, I just thought was just energetic and fun. Great acting. Number 2, probably the only superhero movie in the bunch here, but Captain America the Winter Soldier. I've already watched it 6 times. I absolutely love it.
6 times.
I know. I've got 3 kids, too, so that...
that kind of warms it up.
Yeah, and their mom loves when the 4-year-old is watching a Captain America movie.
Yeah.
Number 3, I have Nightcrawler. Number 5, I have Edge of Tomorrow or Live, Die, Repeat, which I loved. Number 5 is Whiplash, but I've seen that about 4 times now, and every time I watch it, I regret not putting it higher. I absolutely love that movie.
Does the 4-year-old watch Whiplash?
Are you dragging or rushing? Number 6, I have Gone Girl, which the kids do not watch. Number 7, I have Noah. There's very few of us. I know somebody else in this room that might have put it on their list, but there's very few of us that put it there. I really like that movie from the biblical sense that it had the guts to just change things up, unlike another movie like Exodus didn't. Made things interesting. Number 7, I have The Grand Budapest Hotel. Number 8, I have Chef, the food truck father-son movie.
Oh, yeah.
Really enjoyed that one. And then number 10, I have Fury with Brad Pitt, the tank World War II movie. Visceral.
Kevin and Manly.
Yes, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
Things explode and they make Brian's list. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Sarah?
Well, I think the big caveat here is that other than Brian the movie guy, none of us got to see Selma in time to make these lists. Mm-hmm. So my list would be different had we seen Selma in time for this list.
You can throw it on there. I don't mind.
I know, but we're not going to hold it to you. My published list was number 1, I had Boyhood. Mm-hmm. Can't go wrong with the link later.
You can. Sorry.
Here we go.
You know, we're squabbling. 2, I had A Most Violent Year. Ooh. 3, I went with Locke, Tom Hardy, giving, in my opinion, the performance of the year that everybody, for whatever reason, forgot about.
That's right. We all did forget about it. Yeah.
He got some awards.
Not by anything that unfortunately mattered. No. Number 4, I had The Grand Budapest Hotel, Wes Anderson's masterpiece number 3, depending on which way you want to look at it.
Maybe.
Number 5, I had Birdman. Number 6, I had Obvious Child. Jenny Great Slate, movie. Again, Great. Gave the female performance of the year, and nobody remembered it.
That's right.
Nobody saw it.
Nobody saw it. That's even bigger.
Doesn't have anything to do with that.
Well, you want to talk about nobody seeing it. Number 7, I have Cheap Thrills. I have...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't see that.
E.L. Katz's amazing, dark, brutal, upsetting satire with a phenomenal performance from Pat Healy.
Excellent movie.
Awesome. And number 8, I had Calvary. Again, Brendan Gleeson just dominates. And another movie that is actually... much like Noah, about faith and what it really means to have it and in a way that is not didactic or shoving its themes down your throat. Number 9, here is where we do agree. Noah.
Bringing people together.
Is anything that can bring a Coug and a Husky together.
Hey. Yeah, I don't like it anymore.
And for those of you, listening, Brian, the movie guy, is currently in his Coug outfit. Sarah,
outfit.
And
it's a onesie.
It is.
So
it has little feet built into it.
I'm toasty.
And Sarah in Husky regalia at this point. So, okay.
And number 10,
mm-hmm.
Another one that nobody saw and should have. Adam Wingard and Simon Barrett's masterful The Guest.
The Guest.
It's a fun movie.
Yeah.
It's a cult classic in the...
It's in the making.
Very, it will be a cult classic.
Very stylized.
Now, I will say Selma would have made my list had we seen it in 2014.
You got a rough idea where?
Probably like 5 or 6.
Yep.
And I did see Selma, which is phenomenal, mm-hmm. but I made my list after I saw it. I put it like at 13, 14.
Yeah.
Powerful movie. People should see it. Great, great performances, but
mm-hmm.
didn't I'm make sure we'll list. Get to that more when we talk about Oscars.
But yeah. So with the Oscar picks, we definitely see others like Imitation Game and Theory of Everything, which were two that I had on my list, but I put them on there just kind of because I was like, I feel guilty if I don't.
Why? Why do you feel guilty?
I don't know. There was this aspect to me where I was kind of going, none of us mentioned Dawn of the Planet of the Apes either. Which
I felt bad.
That was actually, so I had 4 films that I rewatched a couple times before mm-hmm. I made my list. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes was one of them. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Cheap Thrills, Calvary, and Noah were the ones that I rewatched. Oh, actually, Under the Skin, I had 5.
Mm.
That was another one that I rewatched a couple times before I finalized my list.
Was Grand Budapest the only one that made all 4?
Mm.
Did we all have Gone Girl?
Well, I had Gone Girl.
Yeah, we all had Gone Girl.
Okay. I did not.
Oh, okay. Sarah did not.
Grand Budapest, I think, is the only one
that
hit all marks.
Oh, yeah, because you didn't have Birdman.
I did not have Birdman.
You should put Birdman on there.
I'm not crazy for Birdman. Yeah. It's a solid movie. I don't think it's a particularly great movie, but it's solid.
Wow. Okay. So I guess whittling this down to, I mean, it's a miracle that we can all, but out of 10, we've mm-hmm. managed to find one that we all agree. If there was one that we would say is sort of the, and Sarah, you'd already mentioned this, the one that everyone forgot. I forgot about Locke completely.
Some Seattle critics remembered it. Some forgot, but I mean, it came out way, way back in March it was of around last
the,
year.
I believe it was the same weekend as Godzilla.
No, this came out in Godzilla came out in May. This was still even a couple months before that. Yeah, and everybody talks about Tom Hardy in that film. You can have those conversations all the time, but people did forget about the movie, unfortunately.
Yeah,
I had it at my number 12. I mean, I went on to number more, but I had it at 12 because I loved it. It didn't make my top 10 as good as it was, only because I don't think I'd watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
But still highly recommend it.
And this was actually something that we were talking about in the theater last night, which was and this is described by screenwriters as the hero's quest that I was kind of mentioning too, is that some of these films that we really associate with and the ones that make us feel the most, like I would say Boyhood was one of them, Locke is another, they break protocol, whereas so many of the films that are on our lists follow this In a grander scheme, what's known as the hero's quest, which is individual is in the village, gets kicked out of the village for whatever factor they fall, and has to attain knowledge and then bring that knowledge back to save the day somehow, or show how they've learned this thing or they've learned their lesson and the peaceful village and unity is restored. I mean, that's the basis of almost every film that is out there today. But the ones that stick with us, and Sarah, you and I were arguing about this a little bit. Boyhood doesn't do this, but you're like, but Patricia Arquette does have this arc that kind of does. And I was like, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. Locke being another one that breaks protocol and doesn't necessarily have this hero's quest involved.
No, I think the glory of both those films, and I know that Brian the Movie Guy will disagree somewhat.
But on an island.
And that's fine. I think... The glory of both those films is that what Richard Linklater and Stephen Knight, the writer-directors of both those films, realized is that real life, mm-hmm. actual, real, everyday life, is oftentimes more exciting, suspenseful, thrilling, funny than anything you can make up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the case of Locke, it's a ticking clock thriller.
Mm-hmm.
It's a less than 90-minute movie that takes place in real time, and it is a thriller about a man driving to a hospital. And that is it. There's no bomb that's going to go off. There's no gun. There's nothing.
There's maybe no bomb, but they've got to lay some concrete.
Yeah.
There's the concrete. I mean, this is the biggest lay in Eastern European history or whatever they call it.
Non-military. Non-military.
Of course. Of course. I wouldn't want to offend the military today.
But, I mean, but again, it's him dealing with real world, real life problems and nothing else.
But
and yet it is thrilling and you're choking up and you're caught up in every single moment. Mesmerized. Yeah.
Now, but here's the thing is, okay.
I was mesmerized.
The whole time you were watching it, Brian, you and I think we're both in on this, where we're both going, we were just waiting for like a car to slam into him or something to happen the whole time.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know anything going in other than it was him in a car, but I thought that what was happening and who he was talking to was something completely different. So I just sat down and let it unfold and was drawn in immediately.
And a lesser movie would have done that. Mm-hmm. But this is not that movie. This is him talking to his wife. This is him talking to his son. This is him talking to a coworker.
Not to give away too much.
Yeah.
No, it's not a lot to give away.
I thought he was talking with like a terrorist that was telling him, take a left, take a right. That's not the case.
That's Getaway with
yes.
You're thinking of that,
good point.
Yeah. John Voight. Hit the trash can, please.
Poor Ethan Hawke.
Do you guys have other most overlooked films that you would put on your list?
I mean, there's a couple. I mean, one that springs to mind for me, and I know it's kind of getting a little more of an audience now that it's on Netflix Instant, is Joe Swanberg's Happy Christmas, I think is a really lovely movie. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's been making pretty much like 4 or 5 movies a year for about a decade, kind of the mumblecore thing, and he's kind of getting away from that a little bit, so to speak, with a few more name actors. He did Drinking Buddies a year ago, which had Olivia Wilde and Anna Kendrick.
So good.
And Anna Kendrick came back for Happy Christmas. Have you seen Happy Christmas, Brian?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I have
because
not.
Of you. No. You told me to see it.
Yeah.
Right, fine.
It's got this really especially good performance at the middle of it by Melanie Lynskey. I guess technically supporting, but I mean,
she's
basically
fantastic.
It's her and her husband, who's played by Joe Swanberg, who's the writer-director. You know, they're just kind of a happy married couple. They have this actually cute baby that's doing actually cute baby stuff, which is pretty rare for a movie.
No robot baby.
no plastic baby. No makeup like that. No brats. And the sister moves in of the husband, and it kind of throws the family into flux, but not anything like super dramatic. You know, she's not, you know, bringing in people who are criminals. Her boyfriend isn't someone who's like a mass murderer. It's just kind of the normal stuff and them trying to readjust. And it's just really a lovely movie. And the Melanie Lynskey performance in particular, I mean, I'd have been happy to see her get some Oscar love or some larger awards nominations. I mean, I know that's not the end all be all, but she's a pretty terrific performer. And she takes a part that could easily be kind of shrewish, you know, the wife that isn't happy with the sister moving in, is trying to correct, you know, certain things with the husband and talking about how there's some new problems in the house. And she really makes it a warm performance. You really grow to love the character. And I'm happy that more people are starting to see the movie. I'm happy you liked it, Brian.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I thought it was great. Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's kind of that kind of indie movie for sure, but I don't think it's inaccessible, you know.
Oh, no, not at all. So. I'd be the first one to tell you.
You would be. Yeah. Nothing happens in this movie.
This is stupid. Yeah.
I was thinking one of them that completely slipped the radar, or in my mind kind of slipped the radar, came from I call him one of the busiest actors doing the same character over and over and over, and that's Liam Neeson, actually, in A Walk Amongst the Tombstones.
Right there with you.
Which, it was, I remember watching that and just absolutely being floored by it. It's not that it's a particularly challenging role for Liam, but the film takes you on such a ride that, you know, the fact that it didn't garner more attention completely surprised me.
Yeah.
And it was just one of those completely overlooked and disregarded ones.
And it's one you sit down thinking, okay, Taken 3 was Taken 3. You're thinking, mm-hmm. okay, Taken 3 or Taken 4, whatever.
Right.
And it unfolds in this just more, it's just a darker film, just more interesting than his usual fare.
Yeah, I think it's because he's been doing these, not even similar parts, but similar enough, you know, where he's a man, you know, with a particular set of skills, whatever that is, whether that's on an airplane or in a car. And I know, like, I myself didn't see the movie. Mm-hmm. The screening came up, I was busy, but when it came out in theaters, you know, got mixed reviews. I was like, I will catch up to this one when I can. But there was definitely a sense of, here's Liam Neeson in another movie where he's got to get people out of a jam, and that's all it is. And that doesn't mean that it's bad. There's plenty of great actors to do this similar stuff over and over again, but it never rang as something I've got to make time to see.
Mm-hmm. right mine, and I want to name it before anybody else does, but because I just experienced it not too long ago, Begin Again.
Oh, yeah.
With Mark Ruffalo, Keira Knightley. Just a wonderful... So I have to sell these things to my wife when I have screeners at home or whatever, and she wants to watch... I'm like, let's work our way through this Oscar stuff, you know? And so I'm trying to get her to watch that. But then somebody said Begin Again. I moved that to the front of my list, watched it. I was like, oh, my gosh, I should be watching this with her. So then I got to go back and sell it to her. We still haven't gotten to it yet, but Well, now we're trying to work through the Oscar contenders.
Oh, okay.
Best Picture. But with Mark Ruffalo, like a nice, romantic... Mm-hmm. Big city musical. Adam Levine's in it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Has a huge heart to it, and it doesn't go to the places you'd expect a movie like that to go to.
It really doesn't.
Yeah. And that's what's so fresh and wonderful about it.
What I really appreciated about that one in particular is that the music that they use in that mm-hmm. actual... these artists are supposed to be creating, the music is actually good.
Yeah.
It's not like this kind of throwaway crap or whatever. It's like, wow, I would pay to buy that.
Multiple good original songs.
And it's not a musical.
No.
I did pay to buy that album.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
Does it hold up when you go back and listen to it, I guess, is the other question.
I've probably ruined the album that I listened to it so many times.
I can confirm.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing is it's from John Carney, who's kind of seemed to be, this is his shtick. I mean, in 2007 he did Once, which was one of those movies that everyone kind of knew somebody would see it, and at least amongst like our kind, our critic kind, it was like, this is a good movie, you would like this. It's very kind of easy to watch, goes down well, it's a nice summertime, you know. They both came out in the summer and both were kind of breezy movies that would make you feel good when you left the theater, had the hummable songs, and kind of got a little bit of
won the Oscar
award stuff. Won the Oscar, had the cute little thing where Jon Stewart asked him to come back on stage,
song got sung on American Idol.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
Definition
Once,
of quality.
Yeah, exactly. Once was my pick for the best film of the 2000s. So that tells you what I think of John Carney.
Yeah.
And I loved Begin Again.
Yeah.
And back to Walk Among the Tombstones. Scott Frank, the film's writer-director, who obviously adapted Lawrence Block's book.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of the most underrated talents out there. He did the movie The Lookout a few years ago with...
Did he? He did Lookout with Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Exactly, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, which is great. He also wrote the script for Dead Again, which is one of Kenneth Branagh's great thrillers.
Jeez.
Before Kenneth Branagh kind of lost it a little bit.
Huh.
But if we're going to talk about one of my most underrated films of last year, it was a little indie thriller called Proxy, which is a Hitchcockian Vertigo meets... Psycho kind of deal.
Why don't you scare people off at the plot of the movie?
By the way,
it's hard to talk about the movie.
We're looking at the poster for it here on this computer screen that we're all sitting in front of, and if you haven't seen this before, it looks like a in utero child / Rorschach test blood spattering on a white background.
We're going to be talking a lot about babies today.
Yeah,
the Cinema Scrabble.
Well, I mean, the poster is appropriate, though, especially because the film basically begins with a pregnant woman getting beaten in the stomach.
Mm. Oh, sweet.
And that isn't what the movie ends up being about.
Hmm.
Brian, do you think you'll get your wife to watch this one?
I don't think I'll get me to watch it. No offense, Sarah. No offense, Sarah.
If you do
more
watch
tanks.
It,
needs more tanks.
I was going to say, if you do watch it, it has a couple of extraordinary performances. Not only is our friend... Joe Swanberg back in that one. We've also got Alexa Havens, who the less I say about what she does in this movie, the better.
Yeah.
But it's much like what Hitchcock used to do. It's a bait and switch film where the movie you think you're watching, at about the 25-30 minute mark, you're no longer watching that movie.
Right.
And it becomes something very insidious, very disturbing, but really smart and really sly.
Yeah, and not to be someone who's like, we're not getting money from Netflix Instant or anything like that. But I think one of the nice things with kind of movies now, especially kind of smaller movies like this, a lot of these you're going to be able to find on Netflix Instant pretty quickly. No proxies on there. Or they hit, like, you know, your iTunes or various on-demand things. I know Happy Christmas was on there quickly. Proxy was on there quickly. There's a great movie last year called The Heart Machine and God Help the Girl. You know, some nice smaller movies that you hear people talk about. You don't have to worry about, is it going to come to my theater? Is it going to play in the big multiplex? You can rent most of these for $5-6 now. It's a lot easier than it used to be.
Yeah.
Well, and like we were just at Lock, Under the Skin, those are both available now to watch on Netflix and Amazon Prime.
Hmm. So, okay, so Sarah, you are saying Proxy. Ryan, you, what was your...
Begin Again.
You're saying...
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas. And I'm saying A Walk Among the Tombstones. Overlooked films for 2014. If you had a guilty pleasure, of which I did... Brian, the movie guy.
Oh, yes. No, Brian's everyone's pointing at you. I just want to know if he steals mine, so I don't know which one
I'm
he is.
I'm pretty sure I won't.
Okay.
Guilty pleasure for 2014.
Guilty pleasure. You know, I have three, but I'll go through them very quickly. Mm-hmm. One is Hercules.
Oh, my God.
Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Not the other Hercules?
No, not Hercules. Right. Come on, I'm not crazy. Yeah. It's not a great movie, but they kind of tinkered with the legend and the myth, and mm-hmm. The guy's charismatic, right? I mean, yes. I thought it was interesting and it was fun. It was cheesy and over the top. Not a great movie, but I went in expecting a lot less.
It's mm-hmm. very well cast.
Yeah.
I think we should all... I mean, okay, it is really yeah. well cast.
And they're having fun with it, I yeah. thought. They're tongue-in-cheek kind of stuff.
Okay.
So there's that. I went and saw a movie about
not
these...
Not a good movie, though.
Well, guilty pleasure. Just, I'm not just, saying
right,
it's
right.
a good movie.
Just an idiot talking right here.
I took my 9-year-old son... to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, okay.
We had a great deal of fun with that. Mm-hmm. Not saying it's a great movie, but we had unexpected fun. Mm-hmm. And then finally, and I think everybody hates this movie, although people that I've talked to on the streets, mm-hmm. regular, average moviegoers, I love them dearly, Draft Day. I'm a huge Costner fan, and I had such a bad taste in my mouth.
Oh, boy.
From 3 Days to Kill.
Yeah.
I love Kevin Costner.
My wife.
I love Kevin Costner as well. I'm right there with
and
you.
And Draft Day... For me, that's all I needed to have him back in my good graces. Mm. So yeah, I see the way you're looking at me, Adam.
Yeah,
yeah, I had fun with it. I mean, it was enough. None of it was believable. The mom
right.
comes in with the ashes in the middle of the draft and everything. But I just I love sports movies. This isn't one of the better. This wouldn't be in my top 25 sports movies. Top 30, 40 of all time. But Costner pulled me through, and I bought into most of it, even though most of it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I just couldn't handle that script. I have to. Yeah, I have to say, I'm kind of with you on it, just because I think the cast, universally, the cast.
Right.
Costner,
Jennifer Garner.
Costner's great, mm-hmm. but the cast in total, Dennis Leary, Frank Langella. I mean, everybody in this movie is terrific.
Mm-hmm.
But for a film that got
dramatic pause,
for a film that got the approval and the blessing of the NFL.
It's right.
the least believable professional yeah. football movie
right.
I think I've ever seen.
My wife.
And this goes with, and I've watched that Kurt Russell, Robin Williams football movie where they go back to high school.
Wildcats?
And, I love Wildcats.
That's like cool,
Best of Times, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
The
yearbook thing, yeah.
Yeah. I mean.
I want to know what your wife says about Draft Day.
My wife loved Draft Day. She came home and just unspooled the whole plot for me. And the whole time just like. This would never happen. She's like, but she doesn't know. I mean, she knows sports and stuff, but she doesn't really give a crap about NFL very much. And so mm-hmm. it's happening. I'm like, no, they would never do. They would never do this trade. And then she right. tells me, I'm like, this would never happen. She's like, but it's so exciting.
Could you tell her too, if she's going to live in Seattle, she better start giving a crap about the NFL.
And that
she's got the day off for the Seahawks.
Okay,
game.
Good,
going to
good,
Grandpa's.
Good.
But that was the other thing about that film that that
it came out the year that we won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Right. It number one that number two that it puts Seattle right in the crosshairs of this whole like fiasco, and it makes Seattle look like.
And if I understand right, wasn't there some minor actual similarity in the draft?
Yes.
Tied to Johnny Manziel, like, draft day is actually happening.
Yeah. The Cleveland Browns actually, in some ways, lived draft day for real during past year's NFL draft.
That's Wasn't it fun, though, watching Costner make the deal at the end? I mean, that's where the movie really...
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe that's what won it over
that's
for
where
me.
Where he comes alive.
I can't believe we just spent that much time talking about draft.
Gotcha.
Guilty pleasure for you, Brian.
Okay, I'll throw one small one that's not that guilty because it got decent reviews, which was The Maze Runner, which I thought was a pretty solid young adult book. You know, the story's nothing to really, latch on to or anything
but that
like that.
Ending.
I'm not saying the ending's anything special. I know there's the unfortunate trap of young adult movies that are going for setting up sequels. But I did think the action scenes in that movie were really well shot. I mean, and it had a decently low budget. I want to say it was somewhere around 20, 25. And they really captured the action in a way that, not to
get all hoity-toity or compare somebody to maybe someone who's not going to be an equal, but it definitely had a feel of kind of like Avatar, James Cameron. You know, they really kind of pulled the scope out, pulled the back. You know, you can kind of see where everything's coming from, where people are going, get a full sense of the frame, the widescreen feel of it, which a lot of action movies to zoom in on.
Do you think there's going to be a Maze Runner 2 out of this?
There is a Maze Runner 2 coming out. It made a lot of money. To the Maze.
You're a bad film critic, Adam. It comes out this year in September. Are you serious?
I didn't know either, Adam.
Oh,
no. But I guess my actual guilty pleasure that I thought Adam here, or I thought Brian here would actually steal.
Here it comes.
Is actually Annie.
Knew it.
Oh, my gosh.
I know, I sat at Annie, and it's one of the, this happens sometimes where you're sitting in the theater and you can't tell how the other people are reacting. And I can't remember, Brian, you were on my other side. I know Sarah was on the left of me, and she's just like gagging throughout the movie. And I'm just sitting there kind of toe-tapping. I'm like, man, this is actually pretty good. And I'm not saying it's great. I'm not saying it's like reimagines what's quality in a musical, but I think the songs are pretty good. I think the songs are pretty well sung. I think the cast is charming.
That auto-tune was amazing.
I'm not saying there wasn't auto-tune, but they were still, you know, catchy, nice songs. Kevonsne Wallace has a very nice performance. You gotta admit she's pretty cute in it. And
I did not see it. I chose to watch something else at that time.
Oh, there's another screening then.
Yeah, there was. But what I'm curious to know is A Hard Knock Life in there? Does that make it?
No, it's in there.
It's in there.
And I think
it's not very well staged.
I think it's the best staged. Actually, I think it's the best staged part of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what? I'm glad you said that too. And I think I made you look. I was shocked that you liked it because I took my whole family. And we all loved it.
His family loved it.
I didn't even consider it a guilty pleasure. Annie's awesome. You know?
I think your kids actually disliked me after that. I got the dirtiest looks I have ever gotten from your kids in my entire life. It was like I went over to your house and slaughtered your puppy.
Right. Sarah, I do believe it made 5 Tybal top tens.
It did.
Yes, it did. That's right. Annie made 5 Tybal top tens. Wow.
Put that on the poster.
Okay, so
I'm really good about sitting in a theater and not really expressing my feelings if I'm hating something. Annie was one of those rare instances where I think everyone within like a 5-row radius probably knew how much
somebody
pain
up there is
I
really
was
really disliking Annie. How about Adam? Do you have a particular guilty pleasure that sticks out?
Well, I came up with a few, but the one that sticks out the most, and I have to defend it for a second. I like it because I think the chemistry of all of the actors in it is what makes it fun. But I said Horrible Bosses too.
I liked it.
I liked the film. I actually liked the film, but when I mention it to people, it's like, oh, yeah, I like this one. And they're like, really? Really? You have to like that one? I'm like, I actually do. So I feel a little dirty for liking it. But at the same point, I did.
Where were you on that one, Brian?
You know what? I skipped that one.
Mm. How dare you?
Not because I didn't I wanted to see it because I enjoyed the first one. But something else going on.
Your
three kids.
Vault's completest.
Yeah, we were listening to the Annie soundtrack. I don't know. Something. Yeah.
I don't know if I had a guilty pleasure. It's weird. I guess my guilty pleasures are movies that none of you saw.
No, it's the truth.
I think we would all admit that I'm probably the one that's going to spend more time watching the B-grade.
We also live 3 blocks away from the theater.
How many movies do you see a year? Out of curiosity, Sarah.
So I think last year on my Letterboxd account, I saw 340 films for the first time. And I think last year I thought 250 that were released in 2014.
What about that one where Russell Crowe has the horse and William Smith
Winterdale.
Plays the devil?
Winterstale. That was my pick for the worst film of last year.
That was horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't feel guilt over liking any, but was there something that was like a little more critically reviled that you were like, I think this was much better than people give it credit for. This
Need
be
for
fun.
Speed.
Well, I guess, you know what? Yes, actually. Ooh. As Above, So Below.
Yeah, I mean, that movie's pretty reviled.
It's reviled by critics, but people that see it think it's this underappreciated horror gem from last year. Mm. It's really well done, especially for a found footage film.
Yeah, do you think that's what kind of holds it back?
I do, too. I think critics are tired of that. And the funny thing is, there were probably 5 found footage films made last year that were fantastic. There was As Above, So Below, The Den, and Willow Creek being the 3 chief ones. Mm. But As Above, So Below was the wide release, the one that Universal put some money behind and showed to people.
Did that get the like last weekend of the summer dump where they're we're going to give this the Crow City of Angels weekend?
Totally, they did. I mean, and I'm not going to say that it was any secret what Universal was doing with it, but it was still a wide release, and it was still a film that they put out there for people to take a chance on. And it's smart, it's scary, it doesn't rely on a bunch of jump scares. It actually sets up interesting characters. And when they start going to hell, which is basically what they do underneath the streets of Paris, it freaks you the heck out. Wow. I really enjoyed it. I can't really call it a guilty pleasure because I think it's a legitimately good film. But, I mean, I guess others would want to put it in the guilty pleasure category. I mean, my guilty pleasures are stuff like, you know, Deep Blue Sea. I think that is a horrible movie, but it's a hell of a lot of fun to watch.
Fun watch.
Okay, so horrible films for the year. Do you guys have any that just come to the top of your mind quick?
I mean,
If I Stay.
I live far enough away that I tried to skip the stuff that genuinely just looks terrible. Mm-hmm.
I'll text Brian Z and I'll say, are you going to this one tonight? And I'll just get a hell no back. No.
Yeah.
And I went to one. We went to one. Sarah and I went to one. And you, Adam, went to one last night.
Oh,
my goodness.
Can we talk about it? We could talk about this.
It opens on Friday.
Sure.
The Boy Next Door. That's one where I left, and I do this a lot, but I walk out of there, and I walked out with another one of our friends, Mike Ward, but we walked out, and I was like, so basically we decided to see that instead of spend time with our family. Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Perfect.
And you remember last night was the State of the Union. We could have actually watched one of Obama's best speeches ever instead of...
91 minutes of Jennifer Lopez flirting with... another actor who she claims she's trying to bring up. Is that
Guzman?
No, it's precedent setting for, you know, the industry that it's a Hispanic actor that's been cast in this amazing role of a teenage psychopath.
Yay.
So bad movies.
Bad movie. So yeah, I think that actually takes the
cake. But
that's
for this year.
Yeah, 2015 already starting off, but 2014.
Winter's Tale. We just talked about it, but If I Stay. Also.
If I Stay is
really,
right.
If I Stay. Really hated Chloe. Chloe Grace Moretz. I love you to death, girl. But come on.
Can I throw? Okay, I do have one that has to be probably the worst thing I saw last year, which was Sin City: A Dame to Kill.
Why? Why is that
so bad?
So bad.
Why do you say that's bad?
There's the acting, there's the writing, and there's the directing.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt's good in it.
Go into it.
And then they had the extra, like, they were, like, kind of, like, priming us to hate it even more, where they showed us, like, what was it, like, an hour of, like, the red carpet. Let's watch Frank Miller awkwardly hit on people while Caduce, of all people, is interviewing him.
Yeah, that actually was kind of awkward. That was kind of bad. So
my least favorite was, I'll do my second one, Tammy. I hated Tammy.
Oh, I'm right there with you.
Melissa McCarthy. You know, I like the commercial where she's trying to put the wooden spoon in the freezer lock. Mm-hmm. I thought that was funny. And then I saw the movie and it was embarrassing. Mm-hmm. I thought it was embarrassing for her and so many different tones in it, the serious and
it's hard.
Slapstick. And
I agree, Tammy is a bad movie.
Right.
I think Tammy is a really bad movie. It's hard for me to hate it because I really appreciate the attempt at doing something different, something dark, something bleakly satirical, and something that is infused with a lower middle class reality. Mm-hmm. I don't think the movie pulls it off, but I really respect what she was trying to do.
So what's the worst one, Brian?
Divergent.
Oh. No, it's not.
Here's how I know it's
totally
bad.
Just mediocre to slightly bad movie.
Here's how I know it's horrible. Comparatively, too, to other stuff like The Hunger Games, I look at that and I think, except for this last one, I don't like when they split up movies like that, but Hunger Games, I feel like they've been getting right, right? You know?
Yeah, the first two are fantastic.
Yeah, Divergent, I saw, and my wife, you know, we've three boys at home, she goes, you know, people are like, you must see so many movies. She's like, no, somebody's got to watch the kids. Mm-hmm. So this is one she really wanted to go see. You have to take me to Divergent. I sat there every night when she was reading the book. She's like, this is so good. I can't wait to see this movie. Made a huge deal out of it. We went to dinner. We went out to the movie. 17 minutes into this film, when your wife, the lover of the book, the source material, leans over and she says, and she's not, you know, she's not a sailor. Mm-hmm. She's not on shore leave. But when she leans over and says, this is fucking awful. I was like, oh my gosh, good. I don't have to love it anymore.
Right.
It was amazing to me that your wife for like 2 months was like, I'll let you borrow the books. Oh, you should read the books. I will give you, I have copies of the books. I'll let you read the books. That movie was over. There was not a word about those books anymore. Oh. I haven't heard from her on those. Does she still have the books?
Maybe she burned them.
Okay,
is she just one of those fanboys who doesn't like when they change stuff? You know, she didn't like when Peter Parker had the webs coming out.
Yeah, she's so pissed. She loves Spider-Man. No, she's because she loved. You know, I think I gave Hunger Games a higher grade because after that she just turns to me, she goes, "Wasn't that the best movie you've ever seen?" You know, yeah. No, it was great, honey. Sure, yeah. Sure. So,
SAG Awards are coming up this Sunday on TNT and TBS. If you're dialing in here and on the West Coast, it's 5 o'clock. We've got.
What does SAG mean?
The
Adam?
Screen Actors Guild. So the Screen Actors Guild. It's sort of the precursor to the Oscars. We already had the Golden Globes. Now we've got the SAG Awards, and then we've got the Oscars here in a couple of weeks. SAG Awards, they've got five in each category. Outstanding performance by a cast in a motion picture, outstanding performance by a male, a female, leading and supporting role. We've got just a few minutes left here. Why don't we start with the top here? If you were to just pick off this list here, they've got Birdman, Boyhood, Grand Budapest Hotel, Imitation Game, and Theory of Everything for the best cast. But what? Just round the room real quick. What would you guys say?
What will win? Or
yeah, what do you think will
win?
Yeah,
will. I'm gonna go.
Jeez. I gotta go. I actually think Birdman will win the SAG because a lot of times the SAG will give it to something that's a little more actually has more names, and I think mm-hmm. Birdman has a pretty nice mix. You know, you get your Emma Stone, Naomi Watts, Michael Keaton, mm-hmm. compared to some of these other ones. Grand Budapest has smaller people. Of course, Ed Norton. Mm-hmm. Imitation Game, too many British people.
Yeah.
Theory of Everything. It seems like a really small ensemble, to be honest. And same with Boyhood. I mean, those ensembles are important to the movies, but Birdman's is a little more clearly dynamic.
Can we just say that there's really only two nominees that are actual ensembles here?
Yes.
Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah. Take that first step dad from Boyhood.
I'm sorry, but the other three movies, as great as they are, they're not ensembles.
Am I wrong, Sarah? Do you think Birdman's going to win then? Not what you want to win, we think will win. Or do you think Boyhood's going to still take it?
On? I think Budapest is going to take this.
I love that.
I really do. I think that there's so much momentum behind that film right now. And when you look at how it's done with other guilds and you look at how it's done across the board with precursor awards, it seems like the actors really like that movie. Mm-hmm. Although the lack of acting nominees from that movie is odd.
Right, I suppose. But that could be the way to do it, because, I mean, if you look at best performance by a male actor, Michael mm-hmm. Keaton, I think we could all agree, probably has that locked up or close to it.
Yeah.
Close.
In outstanding
Eddie Redmayne is right there.
So in nominees for outstanding performance by a male in the lead acting is Steve Carell in Foxcatcher, Benedict Cumberbatch in The Imitation Game, Jake Gyllenhaal in Nightcrawler, Michael Keaton in Birdman, and then Eddie Redmayne in Theory of Everything. So you guys are saying it's between Michael Keaton and Eddie Redmayne?
I think that's pretty safe to say. I mean, there's always it's a very small chance. I mean, Gyllenhaal seemed to be getting a lot of love, you know, is kind of building momentum, but I think just the fact that he's getting some of these nominations, but not all of them, is probably as far as he's going to go.
Gyllenhaal, along with Tom Hardy in Locke, I think are two of the best performances of the year. But I'm just glad to see that Jake's up there.
Mm-hmm.
I think Carell should be gone, and I think David Oyelowo should be in there from Selma.
I agree. But can we say that Steve Carell should be in the supporting category?
Yes.
He's not even the lead in that movie.
Well, he should be in supporting, but he shouldn't be nominated in supporting.
I think Keaton's going to take this one, personally.
I agree. I think Keaton's going to take it.
Okay. Outstanding performance by a female in the leading role. We've got Jennifer Aniston in Cake. Got Felicity Jones, Theory of Everything.
She deserves to win, though.
Julianne Moore in Still Alice. Rosamund Pike in Gone Girl. And Reese Witherspoon in Wild.
Well, Julianne Moore is going to win for the movie nobody's going to watch.
Yeah.
But that's got nothing to do with quality. The movie's fine.
Well,
it's not a great...
are going to watch Cake.
It's not... especially now. I mean, I do think Still Alice is better than I know you think it is, Sarah. I don't think it's a great movie, but I mean, I think it's a above average movie. I mean, I think people sometimes mix great movie with great performance or great part with great acting, that kind of stuff.
Great performance, melodramatic movie.
Would you be fine if she won, or would you say that is purely a nod to a career?
It's a nod to a career.
Yeah. Hmm. But it's still a good performance.
It's still a good performance.
Would you be annoyed?
No. I mean, she gives a very good performance. But I think when you look at this category, Felicity Jones and Rosamund Pike give two far superior performances.
I would agree.
Okay. Okay. And so we've got supporting actors and actresses right here. We'll just kind of blast through these real quick. We've got Robert Duvall in The Judge.
Why?
Yeah, I kind of wonder. I think just because he's old. I'm sorry. Ethan Hawke in Boyhood. Edward Norton in Birdman. Mark Ruffalo, Foxcatcher. And J.K. Simmons, Whiplash. I see it going between either Ethan Hawke and J.K.
It's Simmons Norton. Is a lock.
I see Norton.
Yeah, Simmons. It's Norton and Simmons, but Simmons is a lock.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, and outstanding performance by female actress in a supporting role. You got Patricia Arquette in Boyhood, Keira Knightley in Imitation Game, Emma Stone, Birdman, Meryl Streep, Into the Woods, and Naomi Watts for St. Vincent.
If you're St. Vincent's in there, it's going to be
St. Vincent representing.
It is. Yeah. It's Arquette. This category is the one that's over.
Oh, I hate that. I know we're gonna wrap it up, but I thought Arquette was awful, jarringly bad in that movie. But she's gonna win. Good for her.
Yeah, excellent. Oh, and hey, there goes the iPhone to jingle to let us know we are out of time. But Seattle Cinema Squabble or Cinema Squabble Seattle, this is it. Our first edition. We've eaten up about 42 minutes of your time, and thank you to Sarah Michelle Fetters. We've got Brian the Movie Guy and Brian Zitzelman, and thanks to our fabulous producer Sprints Arbogast, who's making this all happen for us right now.
Thank you, Spence.
And thank you for joining us on our first foray into this. We'll hopefully have another one up for you very soon.